Can we take a few questions?
Please. Forgive me for rambling on a few subjects, but and I had a little bit more organized presentation, but.
John?
Oh.
I always have a question, but I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Mother Seraphima has a question.
Yes, you started this talk with the, you mentioned the toll houses.
Yes.
The toll houses have come up several times at some of our discussions and whatnot. Could you please mention something about that?
The whole teaching of the toll houses, by the way, is it is a church teaching, but not dogmatic. Okay, it's not considered dogmatic theology. Blessed from the vision of St. Basil. The whole interesting thing that when you talk about the 40 days, that you know the transition, so to speak, of the 40 days from the time of one's death to the time where he is. Where the temporal judgment is given, the first thing you have to recognize is that the soul no longer exists in time. In the heavenly kingdom, it is timeless. There is no limitation of day and night and so forth. This is for our purposes given to us to understand these things. So indeed, can you sit there and say that, well, this is exactly the time that the toll houses are happening and so forth? There's a great deal of debate on that particular issue. But what are the toll houses? What are they? It is a series, 20, from what I understand, as I recall, 20 specific stops, if you will, or sins for which we are accused. According to the teaching that our guardian angel takes us first along the areas, the places that were familiar to us here on earth the first several days. On the third day, we are taken up to the heavenly kingdom to worship our Creator for the first time and spend 6 days rejoicing with the saints, as it's written. And therefore, on the ninth day, we serve up on Yigidah again, and the soul is taken to hell through the quote-unquote toll houses. And the intent here being that as the guardian angel takes the soul through this, there is a demon for every one of these major sins. And again, I don't remember all of them exactly, but you know, obviously all of the quote-unquote passionate mortal sins and so forth, and all the other things that go on. And you are accused for the sins of your lifetime that were not confessed. Now, this is the part that's most important, and that's why people who have, you know, gone to confession shortly before their death, received Holy Communion and so forth, the toll houses are very much, much easier because they can't touch you. These are sins that have been forgiven, and therefore you are no longer responsible for them before God. But, as I said at the very, very beginning, the sins are presented to us in all their nakedness. There is no protection. We can't get out there and say, well, it happened because of this, it happened because of that. This is what happened. This is what you did. This is what you said. Here it is. And what do you have to protect yourself from it? And the guardian angel who takes you through this, the only protection he has is the good that you have done to combat it or to return it or if it were confessed and so forth and so on. And that stretches for a period, again, for the teaching of 30 days. And at the last, when you add all those numbers together, it adds up to the total of 40. And again, I go back to what I said earlier, that at no toll house can the soul be condemned. The soul will always leave hell after that, because it is in the hands of God to give the temporal judgment and, of course, the final judgment as well. And it is from that time of the temporal judgment to the final judgment that the prayers of the church are most beneficial to the soul, because the soul can no longer repent. You've already gotten all the answers to the test. You can't, you know, take it from that point on. However, the prayers of the church and the prayers of love, those who you've left behind in soul, and that's why it's so important for us to always commemorate the reposed, helps them in that situation. Using a very, very rough analogy, it's the idea of, like, if this is heaven, this is a hell type of a thing, God places you someplace in between, because the understanding is that only after the final judgment do we populate heaven and hell, so to speak. But the idea being that one's lot, so to speak, in the afterlife can be improved through prayer, and they'd be brought closer to God's mercy, so that at the final judgment that they'll, so to speak, you know, make the grave, you know, and be saved. So that is very, very important. And again, like I said at the very, very beginning, for those who, you know, are cremated and so forth, they're not allowed to have funeral services. They're not allowed to even be commemorated in the liturgy. And to be left through this horrible time without the defense of the church is a very frightening prospect indeed. So again, Father Seraphim Rose wrote a rather extensive writing on that particular issue. And it was a bit controversial, by the way. Not all of it was taken as absolutely right type of a thing. So again, going back to the whole understanding, put it at the very least, what one should be concerned about is that, yes, we will answer for our lives. You know, we will answer for our lives before God. And, you know, hopefully if we've tried and done indeed our very best, and we have taken advantage of his mercy and the sacraments and so forth, then indeed that transition will be much easier for us. And woe unto those who don't prepare for it, because, like I said, you're there by yourself and without any protection if you don't have to. So I hope that gives a little bit of... Sorry, much better. I have much more on that. Sure, go ahead. Yeah, please.
Hello, Alexander. Sometimes during Great Lent, I do get a glimpse of like, a better way of life. Like, I do feel like something really touches me during Great Lent. And sometimes during the other fasts, I try to be very zealous with those, you know, I try and keep them strictly. I go to church and have more services and everything. And I don't seem to ever be able to have that same kind of sense of healing or zeal that I experience in Great Lent in the other fasts. So I was just wondering if you have any suggestions for me, maybe something that I'm not putting that effort at during the other fasting periods of the year.
I don't think necessarily that that's the case. The one word of advice I would say is don't expect anything. The term in Slavonic is umilenie, and I don't have a good translation for it in English. Umilenie is, it is not an emotional sense. And this is the danger here, is that we allow our emotions to carry us away, which is again going to the whole issue of passions. Because spirituality is sober, absolutely sober. And this elevation, this uplifting, this spiritual joy is exactly that. It is a spiritual joy. And it happens without the slightest sort of warning. I'll impart a story again. Back in Jordanville, I remember that it was Great Lent. And for the first 3 weeks of Lent, I was beating my brains out, fasting and doing the prostrations, being at every single service and doing everything that I was supposed to do. I was into it. I wanted to do it. I was quite enjoying it, frankly. I love Lent. And yet, spiritually, I felt absolutely empty. It was a very frightening feeling that I felt nothing. And I remember going to my spiritual father on the night of the elevation of the cross, of the presentation of the cross, on the third week. And I confessed this to him. And I said, what am I doing wrong? And he says, you're not. I said, well, then why am I not feeling anything? He said, who are you to demand something of God in return for what you're doing? And I go, whoa. He says, hello, wake up. And it dawned on me that that's exactly what I was doing. And so it was a sense that, that I was doing this because I remember the feelings I'd had before and I wanted to recreate them. They don't come from you. They come from God. And I said, what should I do? And he said, continue doing what you know to be right. The church prescribes these services. Go to them. The church prescribes this fast. Obey. Fulfill your obedience. Do what you're supposed to do. Not according to your will, but according to the will of your spiritual father, as always. So I said, okay. And that night, I stood there very calmly again, sort of lost, going, come on, anything. And all of a sudden, then as the moment came when they began to sing, Spasibo Spiluja Tvoya, save thy people, O Lord. And I cannot explain the feeling that washed over me. I lost literally all control of my senses, in a sense. It was a moment that, to this day, I cannot, you know, describe or explain in any way, shape, or form. But it was a moment of such incredible joy that I find myself literally shaking and in tears, and I had no idea why. And so, when God imparts such grace on a rare occasion like that, this umiljenie, as it's called, it is a genuine gift, and it is not something that can be recreated. We do what is prescribed for us to do because it is the right thing to do. And we try to do our very best at it. If we fall short on something, whatever. The monks of the Sinai, Father Sosimus being one of them, you know, and others who later on, when they would go out into the desert, they would not greet each other. They would not see each other. So if they happened to see one of them, you know, in the desert, they would walk the opposite direction. And when they came back after their 40 days on Palm Sunday or on Lazarus Saturday, nobody asked them, how did it go? Did you have a good Lent? Did you, you know, achieve what you wanted? No. This is strictly between the individual and God. And nobody, you know, condemned them for their mistakes and nobody praised them for their successes. So again, we do these things because they're the right thing to do. We do them because this is what is, we think, well-pleasing to God, as the church teaches us to do. And if God graces us with this moment of joy, or whatever, and it should always be questioned too, just as an aside, because the danger there is that the emotions may be playing more of a part here than the spirit. And this is, again, a very, very fine, fine line that takes judgment and discernment. And that comes from a very spiritual perspective. Again, I forgot who was the father who wrote this particular issue. But I remember that he writes of how he was standing in the altar praying. And as he was praying, all of a sudden, an angel appeared next to the altar table. And the angel began to talk to him and say that he should be doing something, whatever. And at first he was, I'm being visited by an angel. And then he thought, wait a second. Who am I that an angel of God would come to me? I'm not worthy of such a thing. And he said, be gone. Because I'm not worthy to be visited by a spirit of God. And all of a sudden, the demon that was the angel showed himself and disappeared. And again, these temptations are out there. And the biggest temptation of all is our own human weakness. Our own emotions, you know, that when we are moved by the sound of the singing or something, or certain prayers or whatever. I suck onto that all the time. Sometimes I'm reading some words in gospel and so forth, and suddenly they just, you know, they catch me. And I think to myself, he wrote this one for me. You know, this is my gospel. You know, this is what he's talking about. You have to be very cautious of these things, not allow the emotions to carry you away into this la-la land. That's the whole charismatic revival issue. Let's, you know, let's hear a few hallelujahs and have a good time type of a thing. But where's prayer and so forth? You know? It's just for fun. I remember when I saw, when I was maybe young, I was out at my mom's place on the 25th. And we were wrapping presents for the 7th, of course. And I thought, you know, I'll stick on the TV, what's going on? It was late. And Pope Paul was serving in the Vatican. And God, it's very nice. A little boring, you know. So we flicked us in there. Some Presbyterian minister was reading something, and I said, nah, I don't like that. And then this Black Baptist minister comes out there. And he starts stirring up, and he starts going, Jesus is my friend! And the place is just rocking and rolling. And I said, this is a lot of fun. You can't pray for anything, but it's a lot of fun. You know, and you walk out of there saying, I feel great! God is great! Go, God! And then you go back after the emotions all settle down, and you go back to your normal sinful way of life and achieve nothing. You know. So, like I said, you know, I remember in Jordanville on Pascha, you know, looking at the monks there, and nobody was, you know, dancing up and down and so forth and screaming and yelling and whatever. They were walking back. And they say, Christ is risen, but truly is risen, like that. And the joy you saw was in their eyes. You know, a deep, deep spiritual joy and contentment. So again, this is a very, very important issue when it comes to not only practice, but our spiritual life altogether, is not to allow ourselves to be carried away by irrational emotions, but to always be very, very sober in what it is we're discerning. I've had enough of me.
Okay, well, any more questions? Yeah, thank you very much, Father.
Martha, thank you for the opportunity. Forgive me for not giving you a better presentation.